Would everyone in the Missouri Senate, as well as our guests and upper galleries, please rise for a prayer by Reverend Gauck, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag.
From the 21st Psalm we hear, "You bestow on him blessings forever. You make him glad with the joy of your presence." Almighty God, we are grateful for a celebratory evening last night and the blessings we experience every day. Your presence reminds us to do good to those whom you have given and made us responsible. And we are thankful for your presence in our lives, for it brings joy to our hearts. You have given us a sense of competency in the important things that we must undertake and bring to conclusion. For that is what we are here to do, for which we have given you thanks and praise. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Arthur, Bean, Beck, Bernsketter, Black, Bratton, Brown 16, Brown 26, Carter, Searpoy, Coleman, Crawford, Eigel, Esslinger, Fitzwater, Gannon, Hoskins, Huff, Koenig, Luchtemeyer, May, McCreary, Moon, Mosley, O'Loughlin, Razor, Rizzo, Roberts, Rowden, Schroer, Thompson Rader, Trent, Washington, Williams.
The senator from the 7th is here. Quorum has been established. The Senate is in session. Madam Secretary, please read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, 21st day, Thursday, February 9th, 2023. The Senate met pursuant to adjournment.
Senator from Shelby.
Mr. President, I move that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
You've heard the motion from the Senator of Shelby County. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Hearing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, I close.
Senator from Shelby renews her motion that the reading of the journal be waived, but it be approved as though having been fully read. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have approved the journal. Introduction of guests. Senator from Lawrence.
May I inquire of the senator from the 2nd, please?
Senator from the 2nd District, you yield to an inquiry.
You.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. I don't think it's any mystery to people what happened over the last several days with a whistleblower coming out providing testimony and facts, I believe they are facts, about the happenings at Washington University's Transgender Center. And I don't want to take all night doing this. I think that's probably going to relieve some to hear that. But I think it would not be right not to at least have a brief discussion about what happened. And here I am talking to the Mr. President, and I ask for an inquiry of the senator from the 2nd. So forgive me, Senator. You are aware of the affidavit that was filed. Is that correct?
Yes, I've got the affidavit of Jamie Reed here on my desk when I first saw the story break last week.
Yes.
That's when I went to the Attorney General's website and pulled up this affidavit. And to me, this is the most startling, the most disturbing information, as this person here is swearing under oath that these allegations are true. So if you take these allegations as true, in my opinion, this is some of the most disturbing stuff that I've seen since my time being up here in 2017, if not the most disturbing allegations that I've heard since I've been alive.
Yes.
We're talking physicians that take a Hippocratic oath to first do no harm. And if these allegations as taken as true, it's startling because that Hippocratic oath was totally ignored. The allegations that are in this affidavit of Jamie Reed are criminal in nature. I think they're disgusting. It's almost experimental in nature. And I know over the weekend, several of the senators, several of the House members started discussing where to go next. The Attorney General has an investigation. Our senators in D.C. indicated that they have an investigation. And I know that there was a letter that I signed off on that you had requesting an investigation. Because, you know, let me be clear, this institution, Washington University, does a lot of good work. And it's an institution that has helped family members of mine that have gone through cancer. And but for these cancer treatments, these experimental drugs that they concocted through a lot of research in another department, not this transgender department, I don't know where those family members would be today. But to me, this puts all that on the back burner. You can have, just like in a law enforcement field, you have cops that day in, day out are doing the right thing. But it only takes that one bad apple and the media to cover it to make all law enforcement look bad. So when we do talk about this, I don't want to talk about all of the good that they're doing. I want to focus on the bad because I think this overshadows all of that. And if we're going to have one of the number one institutions when it comes to research, development, healthcare in our state, this affidavit, these allegations, these criminal allegations cannot go unchecked.
I agree wholeheartedly, and there are, I was just looking here, there are 86 different points that were made by the whistleblower Jamie Reed, and that took a lot of courage, I believe, for her to do this. I can only imagine what she is enduring today, and I don't really plan, unless you want to, read every single item. I've highlighted some things, and they're even lengthy just to go through the highlights and some of the bold print that I've mentioned or made here, but for... I'm going to use the word so-called healthcare providers. You talked about some good they do. I believe they do also do good. But this is like your reputation.
Right.
Where it takes a lifetime to build a reputation and 1 second to lose it. And so how can we continue to trust this institution? I don't know. But they're going to have to come clean. Whether or not it's from the Attorney General's investigation or whether or not they will permit us to do similar investigative work.
Well, Senator, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, in the House I wasn't on the budget committees. I was on some investigative committees when it came to the medicinal marijuana investigations in a former government oversight committee. But I firmly believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, that we need to do our due diligence representing all of the constituents that we came down here to work for to investigate this, because I firmly believe some of our tax dollars are going to not only the institution, but this clinical research department. And we need to figure out, is this the tip of the iceberg? Is there more? Yes. Because we've got on the back pages of the affidavit, I think it's page 21 and 22, there's allegations of insurance fraud, whether it's private insurance or through Medicaid.
Right.
So it's a misuse of our taxpayer dollars if these allegations are taken as true. And when we're determining how to best use and dole out our tax dollars, I think our body needs to do its due diligence and get to the bottom of whether this is true or not.
I wholeheartedly agree. And I think that's the basis of what I'm doing right now is to bring attention to it for those who haven't read the affidavit and to understand its seriousness. When you have center health care providers lie to the public, their parents, about the treatment.
And that happened last year, Senator.
Yes.
I was in a committee where I believe we're going to hear this week a bill that you and a couple others have in the Emerging Issues Committee. an almost identical bill was heard last year. I think it was in the General Laws Committee, and there were two doctors that were mentioned in this affidavit.
And they're not doing that, right?
They indicated that, you know, it's few and far between that these transition surgeries ever happen to minors. Yeah. These drugs, these hormone replacements, these puberty blockers are 100% reversible, that they're not going to do any harm to these kids, mental or physical. And the testimony that they provided last year to put a hurdle in place of that bill moving forward, for us to represent our constituents and try to protect, be a voice for these very vulnerable kids. I mean, these are kids that are going through a lot of changes with their bodies, male or female. You've got a lot of hormones, a lot of development going on, and a lot of changes that you and I, everybody in this body, has gone through. And these highly impressionable kids, it's exactly why we have to have these bills, to stand up for them and say, well, wait a second. You can't make it a life-altering decision when it comes to contracts without parental approval. You can't get a tattoo. You can't get enter into a contract, join the military. There's a slew of different things that you can't do because we have determined as a society that these life-altering things, you must have parental involvement in. And like you indicated, if there are these witnesses that are coming forward, that are the spokespersons for this clinic, that are lying to us, lying to the lawmakers, then to me, that provides credibility to the rest of these allegations.
I just noted one portion that I'd highlighted here where this particular former employee, Jamie Reed, was trying to do what was right. She saw the harm that was being done to some of these kids. She brought it up to her supervisors and others, and they told her essentially, this is the university administration, according to her affidavit, point number 8, get with the program or get out. Now, we all need jobs.
You're on point number 8. Let me backtrack for point number 7.
Sure.
Something that stood out to me is the allegation that stated she witnessed staff, and this is Jamie Reed's testimony, that she witnessed staff at the center provide puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones to children without complete informed parental consent and without appropriate or accurate assessment of the needs of the child.
Uh-huh. I had that on highlighted too, but I thought since we'd already talked about this, it's egregious, even just that. And then for them to say, look, we don't really care about you. We don't really, by their statement here, if it's true, and I believe it is, we don't care about the kids either. Maybe it's about profitability. Now, we could talk a lot about that. I'm going to leave that there for right now, but I think that because of the expense of this and some other things that I believe they are doing, that it's all about the money. And I don't...
Well, I think that's a question that a lot of us have is why. If these allegations are true.
Yeah, that's true.
And we're talking about a witness that is likely, you know, not impeachable. You can't impeach this witness to say, well, wait a second, you're going to get an appointment to some prestigious Republican board. This is somebody who in interviews has said that she is further left than Bernie Sanders.
I know it.
Who supports probably 1% of the policies that I push forward in this body or in the House when I was over there. So there's nothing to gain other than protecting these kids, which she stated that's why she took the job in the first place, to protect these kids when they are going through these changes, to get them the mental health help that they need to work through the process. So to me, that's why I believe that these allegations have a lot of credibility.
Yes.
Because there's nothing for this person to gain politically by coming out and becoming a whistleblower.
Yep. I was looking through this with the different stages, and I think it's later on in the affidavit, but they had at least 4 different measures for admitting these kids to the different programs. And endocrinology, for example, would prescribe puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones. And then adolescent medicine was for children after puberty, and they prescribed cross-sex hormones. The children would go into there wanting help. The parents, of course, wanting to get their children help. These kids would be treated. And then when there was some adverse reaction, the parents would often bring this up to them. It was almost like the staff saying that to these kids, okay, come on in, let us help you. And then after the evil deed is done, they say, get the HD double toothpicks out of here, out of my house. You're no longer welcome. It's like, we're harming you. We're not going to help you after that. They're turning a blind eye to the dastardly deed that they're doing and have done, and this must stop.
Well, I think you look at page 4, section 13, that talks about most of this medical transition practice is based on a Dutch study.
Yep.
That excluded participants. It said, okay, these transitions are not good for patients that are presenting with underlying mental health issues. But thereafter, when you go to sections 14 and 15 and 16 and so on,
yep.
Look at page or section 15 where it says one person came in identifying as a communist in attack helicopter,
yeah.
A human female, maybe non-binary. They immediately put the child on cross-sex hormones. Subsequently, their mental health was actually worsening after they gave them that the cross-sex hormones. Then you go to another one in here.
And Senator, let me stop you there. This appears to me that they did not do their due diligence. They were seeking some other alternative as opposed to actually helping the kids.
Right.
And that's what we need to find out.
Well, and why is this Dutch study, which all of this is based upon, why is that not being adhered to? Because obviously somebody who comes in that believes that they are an attack helicopter, possibly human, there's an underlying mental health issue that needs to be treated.
Yeah.
And rather than providing that treatment, providing the care that child needs, obviously we're doing more damage. And, you know, there's somebody in here that this whistleblower mentions, identified as being blind, mm-hmm. but was not physically blind whatsoever. And instead of addressing that problem, they went ahead with the transition in hormone replacement therapies.
Yeah, you mentioned the Europeans, and they have actually gotten ahead of us. They've turned their backs and turning away from these transgender surgeries and procedures, and yet it seems like we're in the dark ages. We're still doing it, and I don't know why, but I have a suspicion.
I'd love to get some answers as to why, because as of right now, we have allegations, we have speculation. And this week, I am confident that we're going to have the issue of your bill and several others being testified against by individuals that work at this institution.
Yep.
Is there credibility? When they signed a witness form in the House under oath, you know, does that result in us going after them to ask them why did you lie under oath on this document last year? I don't understand why when we're dealing with our most vulnerable, why it is okay. And I'm not saying that that's happening here today, but why is it okay for the leadership at this institution to turn a blind eye when these allegations are brought forth that they are doing more harm to our kids, to our most vulnerable in our population?
The mention by Ms. Reed here on point number 30, the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, they go by the acronym WPATH, considered to be the best medical standard of care, but they're controversial. And it's considered an activist organization, WPATH is, and its standards for care or the guidelines they use are much more lenient than the standards of care created by other organizations. Yet during this time, the WPATH standard of care in version 7, as it's stated here, that children be at least 16 years of age to start using cross-sex hormones. The center deviated, and I'm talking about the Transgender Center, Washington University, deviated even from this most lenient standard and routinely prescribed cross-sex hormones for children as young as 13. And I just turned the page here. It was talking about the effects these hormones have on people after just 2 or 3 months. They're not reversible.
Right.
So we're chemically castrating and chemically sterilizing young people who have never had the opportunity to grow as a child, to mature, and make this decision with an adult mind. And Senator, we could go on and on and on.
Well, I know you mentioned the WPATH guidelines.
Yeah.
Section 36, prong 36, indicates that WPATH right. guidelines require a full psychological assessment of the child before recommending puberty blockers or cross-sex hormones.
Right.
A full assessment, according to the WPATH guidelines, requires 10 to 12 hours of time with that child. Therapists at this center would send letters just after an hour to 2 hours with the patient saying that this is the right course to proceed with the transition. And like you stated on section 51, she alleges doctors know that the cross-sex hormones make children permanently sterile, yet the doctors did not share this information with parents or the children. And you've seen, I can guarantee you, you've probably seen the same videos I have that are being shared by individuals that have gone through these transitions that were never told this is going to make you permanently sterile, that now are stating, I wish I had the opportunity to have children of my own. And if I was told that this would make me sterile, I would have second-guessed or probably not gone forth with the transition.
And there were two additional sections there. One, I think an 18-year-old female who had her breast removed, and then she became pregnant, and she wanted her breast back. I think she asked for them after about 3 months.
Called back and asked if she could get them back on.
And we're not properly communicating. They're not counseling these individuals. 1 to 2 hours, and it takes 10 to 12. There's no way in the world they're getting
what
the way
other
they need
arena
to get
in healthcare? Just look at healthcare as a whole. What other area is allowed to treat patients like this and mislead them, misguide them?
I can't think of one.
Almost MK Ultra experiments on them and then walk away without any recourse.
Yeah. Now, I want to make one more point here. It's on 74. 72, you talked about. I was going to share that, but that may be a little bit too descriptive for some, so I'm not going to talk about that one. Number 75, though, or 74, one doctor at the center mentions the name is giving drugs called bicalutamide. I think I'm pronouncing that right, bicalutamide. The drug has a legitimate use for treating pancreatic cancer, but it has a side effect of causing breasts to grow. It can poison the liver. There are no clinical studies for using this drug for transgender or gender transitions, and there are no standards established for care after using the drugs. And so this is essentially, I think
off-label
it's handing
use.
Out to malpractice.
Yeah. That's what I kept thinking every time I would flip through these pages, hearing more allegations and more damage being done to our constituents. It's malpractice. And then you go to page 22, like I mentioned before, sections 82, 83, 84. 84, I have personally witnessed staff report that they were aware that patients had been coded incorrectly, coding for precocious puberty, which the healthcare providers that I've spoken with personally, very, very few of them have actually seen precocious puberty. It's very rare, but the institution was coding this. Look up at 83, they were coding bills to publicly funded insurance programs incorrectly.
Sounds like fraud.
100% it sounds like insurance fraud. And that, to me, is enough evidence. I'd set all the other stuff aside that we just discussed. A misuse of our tax dollars through the Medicaid programs, knowingly violating the laws.
And major penalties when that is discovered and it happened. So.
And with the Medicaid program taking up so much of our budget, I think that we owe it to taxpayers in our state to investigate this and make sure that this is not happening. And if it is, determine what appropriate penalty needs to be issued.
Well, Senator, we've spent the better part of a half an hour on this, and I appreciate your input because I think you've got a good handle on it. And I'm just hopeful that this will lead to a full investigation. AG's already talked about it. We need to, in the Senate as well, to do our due diligence. And I'm grateful that you're as concerned as I am. Thank you, Senator.
Senator, I know in the House, whenever the Senate would do something, it was never good to say, well, the Senate's got this on lock. We're going to determine what's best. No, the House was going to do their own thing. And I do trust our Attorney General. I do trust Senators Hawley and Schmidt. But I do think we owe it to our constituents, to these victims, I would say, these young people that have been misled and harmed. We must investigate this and determine the appropriate cause of action to move forward.
Well said. Thank you, Mr. President.
The order of business and introduction of guests, the senator from the 7th District.
Mr. President, may I inquire of the senator from Clay?
Senator from Clay, do you yield?
Yes, I yield.
She does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. It's good to see that you are here today and with us. Did you do anything last night?
Well, I don't know if you've heard, but Missouri's official football team won the Super Bowl last night.
That is fantastic.
It is taking everything in me to not scream into the microphone. How about those Chiefs?
How about those Chiefs?
I grew up a Chiefs fan. I watched the Chiefs in the 90s. I had a poster of Neil Smith on my wall. There were There were some great players, we had some good years, but nothing like this. And I will never take it for granted just how special it is to win the Super Bowl again.
Again?
Again. Patrick Mahomes is not human.
True.
And I think I saw a clip of you. Well, you made a prediction that the score was the Chiefs were going to win by three.
Yes.
And that at halftime, we were going to be crying in our beers. And, Senator, I wasn't crying. It was just very dusty in my house at halftime.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But as you predicted, there was an amazing comeback, and the rest is Chiefs history.
I mean, you knew that was going to happen. That's what this team is that they kind of crush our souls, give us panic attacks, anxiety attacks, and then somehow Mahomes magic pulls it out, and we're having a Super Bowl parade again.
I just couldn't be more excited. It is great for everyone in the state of Missouri. And personally, I have never been more proud to be a Kansas Cityan.
So two thoughts on that. One, it might be bad for a handful of people that we met with on Friday because they already have a lot on their plate at the moment, and now we're adding a Super Bowl parade.
That's true.
Organizing that to their plate. So
a good problem to have, though.
It is a very good problem to have, but they may disagree with you just on a work basis. I'll ask you, since you brought it up, being so proud to be a Kansas City, is this the best time ever to be a Kansas Cityan?
I think it's just going to get better and better. That's my hope. But it is growing up, I never would have dreamed that Kansas City would be experiencing the success that we are lucky to see.
Yeah, we have just 15 days until the airport opens. Streetcars expanding. We're having a Super Bowl parade. The NFL draft is there in April. It's going to bring 500,000 or more people to the city.
Yeah.
It's just an amazing time.
And, you know, I have to call out, there were jabronis across the country who thought the Chiefs didn't stand a chance in the Super Bowl. And I was a little nervous at halftime. There may have been some cuss words said.
Wow.
There may have been some pacing happening.
A lot of pacing.
But I, again, with a team like, with stars like Patrick Mahomes, who can have my ankle if he needs a transplant during the break, Travis Kelce, who is my constituent, despite my constituent outreach, I would guess he has no idea who I am. the rookies came through in a huge way. Chris Jones, Frank Clark. It was just amazing to see the team work together and deliver for all of us.
Well, hopefully we will all be able to go and celebrate on Wednesday. Have a good time.
If they need someone to carry the trophy, I will volunteer.
You'll volunteer
my services.
For that?
Yep.
All right, maybe Clark Hunt heard that and he'll sign you up.
I'm sure he is spending his afternoon listening into the Missouri Senate.
God, I hope not. I really hope not.
So, well, thank you for the inquiry, Senator. I hope all of our colleagues are decide to join us on Wednesday.
Wednesday.
And I hope that we get to have this inquiry. Like I said, I'm not greedy, not taking anything for granted, but it wouldn't kill me if we got to have this inquiry again before our time in the Senate is over.
Oh, I think we should. And I appreciate you ending the inquiry, but I think I inquired of you, so I have to do this next piece.
Okay, and all right. I also I get to share a little bit about our Black History recognition. So,
well, I will.
If you don't mind, I'll.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President.
The order of business is introduction of guests. The Senator from Clay.
President. I'd like to request a moment of personal privilege.
The senator from Clay County requests a moment of personal privilege. Senator, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the privilege today to highlight someone very important who contributed a ton to Black history and also Missouri history. I am recognizing Lucille Bluford. She was a journalist and a trailblazer. She was the perfect example of a notable Black Kansas Cityan. In 1918, John Bluford, his wife Addie, and Miss Bluford's brother moved west to Kansas City. John became a science teacher at an all-Black Lincoln High School, where he taught for more than 25 years. Miss Bluford joined her family in 1921 at the age of 10 and attended Wendell Phillips Elementary in Lincoln High. She demonstrated an early passion for journalism and civic engagement as a member of her school newspaper and yearbook staffs, the student chapter of the NAACP, and the student council. After school, she often spent time on 18th and Vine, the offices of the Kansas City Call, the Black newspaper founded by Chester Franklin in 1919 that would become the focus of Miss Bluford's long career. Like other Black newspapers in Kansas City and across the country, The Call provided a critical alternative to white-owned newspapers that generally ignored the needs of the African-American community. Originally a reporter for the Kansas City Call, Bluford was accepted to the University of Missouri's graduate journalism program based on her credentials, but the registrar refused to enroll her in classes due to her race. She then sued the University of Missouri. The judge ruled in the university's favor, but Bluford appealed to the Missouri Supreme Court, which decided in 1941 that the state should admit Bluford. Rather than admit her, the university closed its graduate journalism program. However, her story did not end there. She continued her career and in 1955 became the editor of the Kansas City Call. She became an editor at a pivotal moment in the history of the civil rights movement, maintaining the paper's original mission to draw people together in the fight against racism. Following the death of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in 1968, Bluford wrote a scathing article rebuking the police department for tear gassing peaceful protesters who were honoring Dr. King. She continued to contribute to The Call, covering issues that affected the Black population in Kansas City until her death in 2003. Thank you, Mr. President.
The order of business is introduction of guests, petitions, memorials, and remonstrances, resolutions, concurrent resolutions. Senator from the 24th.
Thank you. I have a concurrent resolution.
Please send your concurrent resolution forward.
Thank you. No explanation needed.
Thank you, Senator. Madam Secretary, please read the resolution, concurrent resolution.
Senate concurrent resolution number 12, introduced by Senator McCreary. A concurrent resolution relating to Rivers of Missouri Day.
Concurrent resolutions. Introduction of bills. Senator from the 24th.
I have two bills. No explanation needed.
Thank you, Senator. Please send your two bills forward. Madam Secretary, please read the first bill.
Senate Bill number 623, introduced by Senator McCreary, an act relating to distributors of hypodermic needles.
Madam Secretary, please read the second bill.
Senate Bill Number 624, introduced by Senator McCreary, an act relating to small loans.
Introduction of bills. You sent it from the Senate.
I have a bill.
Please send your bill forward.
No explanation needed.
Thank you, Senator. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill Number 625, introduced by Senator Razor, an act relating to emergency medical services.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Shelby.
Mr. President, I would ask if there are messages from the House, and if so, would you have them read?
There are messages from the House. Madam Secretary, please read those messages.
Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Committee Substitute House Bill 14, entitled An Act to Appropriate Money for Supplemental Purposes for the Expenses, Grants, Refunds, and Distributions of the Several Departments and Offices of State Government and the Several Divisions and Programs thereof, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested, respectfully submitted, Dana Rodema Miller, Chief Clerk.
Senator from Shelby.
Mr. President, without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements, and I have an announcement.
Hearing no objection, the order of business will be announcements. Senator from Shelby.
Excuse me. Without objection, I ask that you go to the order of business of reports of standing committees, and I ask you to recognize the Senator from Scott for a report.
No worries, Senator. With no hearing no objection, the order of business will report of standing committee. Senator from Scott County.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a report.
Please send your report forward. Madam Secretary, please read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Fiscal Oversight, to which was referred Senate Substitute Number 2, Senate Committee Substitute, Senate Bills 4, 42, and 89, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Respectfully submitted, Senator Thompson Rader, Chairman.
Senator from Shelby.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements, and I have an announcement.
Hearing no objection, the order of business will be announcements. Senator from Shelby.
Mr. President, I would like to remind everyone about the annual Senate bowling tournament happening tonight at Strikers. Food will be served at 6:30 and bowling at 7:30. Also, Mr. President, session will begin at 1:30 tomorrow to allow the majority caucus to meet at 1:00 in the Senate lounge.
Thank you, Senator. Further announcements? Announcements? Senator from Shelby.
Mr. President, with no further business coming before the body, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 1:30 p.m. Tuesday, February 14th.
You've heard the motion from the Senator of Shelby County. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Thank you. Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate shall stand adjourned until 1:30 p.m. Tuesday, February 14th.